the common bloody ground, bloody battleground of Armageddon becomes a symbol of decisive battles. Well, I just want you to... Yes.
What about the tribulation, that destruction of Jerusalem?
Okay, the, this view basically is that the church will be on earth, and then, and that the tribulation, some hope that the church will go through terrible troubles at various times, but that the, most views, most who are in this position view the tribulation, the great tribulation, Matthew 24, is speaking of the fall of Jerusalem, not the second coming of Christ. Although there will be a tribulation, perhaps, there will be tribulation, there will be trouble. That is not the same thing as believing in the tribulation spoken of in Matthew 24.
So there is tribulation sprinkled in the
right. Yeah. Right. And most would hold there will be a time of trouble at the end, toward the end. I myself hold that view. I think the Bible, and we'll get to Revelation 20 and see why, but it's pretty good. Yeah.
How would there be a Bible one again?
What's my view of the Armageddon? I think it's a figurative, not surprising to the Revelation, that what is being fought there is the battle to the death between the gospel and paganism. Jesus fights with the sword coming out of his mouth, the word of Christ. I would simply point out that battle took a lot of years. It took about 4 centuries. And many died in it. Literally. Tremendous battle.
Past battle? Past battle?
Yes, in the early centuries of the church.
That was Armageddon?
I think so. Yeah, it's, I would set up all that and argue. Now, we're getting to the book of Revelation. I don't teach Revelation. I simply view. See, I think starting, I explain basically why I think that is that the, so you start with your, the basic view, regardless of what, how you, regardless of how we interpret particular sections of the book of Revelation, how we view the book in general, in toto, is determined by what the book says about itself. I take the position that we ought to interpret the book of Revelation such a way that our starting point is what the book says about itself, not what some is said about it by theorists. And of course, the book of Revelation says about itself that it's speaking of things that are then happening, shortly come to pass, the time is now, below it. It was written to 7 churches about the troubles they were having right then. And there is no indication whatever in the book of Revelation that is that it was simply put on hold until, you know, everything in it was, you know, most of it was put on hold and it would begin to be fulfilled sometime in our future. But not necessarily that about itself.
Is there a possibility that somebody could say that, you know, that language that, you know, soon happened would be much like Paul when he said the Lord is soon returning?
Well, I think that's exactly the same. I think that Paul, as we said earlier in the story, he thought the Lord was coming back.
Well, I'm saying is that, you know, it's possible, but people could say that reasonably, that that is talking about, you know, they thought it happened soon, but it's actually going to happen until...
Well, no, because Paul was talking about that which he did not know about, the second coming. But Revelation, I think you ought to know that you're hard put to find teaching the second coming in the book of Revelation. It's one of those assumptions in that God's always put this on. Look at what's about the second coming of Christ. Oh yeah? Exactly where? Look at Revelation. Follow me? And often the second coming of Christ is included as the book of Revelation looks down into eternity. But to say that, that's not what the statement's about. Not what it was about. Particularly, you know, the excluded. By the way, I'll say this about the book of Revelation, I've said this before, perhaps. It takes more genuine knowledge and learning and training and linguistics and theology and history and literature to deal with apocalyptic literature because it is so tied to culture. Now listen to me. I'm not trying to scare you, but I'm trying to challenge you. Now learn this, that the most difficult idiom to control in any literary culture, now what I mean by literary culture is in a given age, we use certain words, we use language in a certain kind of way, and we use certain words which are tied very much to our world, our present, it's our literary context, how we use words, the relationship between actions and words, the relationship between things and words, and it's not always the same. And the most difficult, and this particular specialized way is called idiom, and the difficult idiom to control in any literary context of any age is the figurative language. You got that? For instance, you take the word water, okay? That means what it means pretty much. It's an object, objective. Think of literal things, common things, objective things. But when we get into figurative language, this very difficult to control this. To understand it when we are not living in the literary context in that world. For instance, how much of the slang today do you think people 100 years from now will understand if they just came up on, they stumble on it unprepared? Right? Think about it. How much of our slang is very figurative. Our language is very figurative. Anyway, how much of it would you understand? For instance,
you're not going to even go that far in the future. Like, Mason's just saying that the youth group at Orange City has figured out language that we haven't yet figured out.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to think of something else to specify the young people. Go ahead.
It reminds me of a woman, the lady approached me, and I took her literally. She said, my tie looked bad. And I heard Dutch, and her two daughters, who are teenage, had to explain to me, she didn't like, my tie was good. It was nice. She liked it. But she said it three or four times before I thought,
bad.
Bad.
He used to say, it's cool. Now, you imagine somebody come along 2,000 years later translating a document, this man's tie was bad and cool. We have language, for instance, suppose you read, that was his Waterloo. What did you think about that?
Defeat.
The defeat. You have to follow it, but you have to have some very specialized knowledge to know what that means, don't you? It's like his Armageddon. What I'm saying is that it takes a great deal to know more to control the figurative idiom in any literary context, and because the Book of Revelation is apocalyptic and admittedly figurative, it's a sign, symbols, it takes more, that is probably the last book in the New Testament anybody ought to get into, because it takes more preparation and knowledge to deal with it. And yet, very often, it's the first book Christians want to get into. Right? I mean, they're saved on Tuesday or Wednesday, they want to get into the book of Revelations. They're enamored of the future. And this is why, in my opinion, there is more unmitigated hogwash presented to the American people, the people of the world, in the name of the book of Revelation, than you can shake a stick at. I mean, elaborate, sophisticated, well-stated baloney. And tons of it. The Book of Revelation, I'm telling you, if the Book of Revelation actually taught all it's supposed to teach, the world itself couldn't contain it. Let me take a semi-truck and put all the pages around. It would be astounding, the Book of Revelation teaches. Most of it doesn't even say. Well, it has become the crystal ball that every religious enthusiast has looked into. And what do you see in a crystal ball? What you see in a crystal ball is what's in your own mind. people, this is not exegesis, this is eisegesis, but in, well, anyway, I said, well, so we're going to study some sections of the book. This is not a course in Revelation. We are going to study Revelation 20, Revelation 13, those on top of the study. But what I'm saying here is that this view of the millennium as being an indefinite period of time and the spiritual reign of Christ is not a strange view, not a strained view at all. To answer your question, this view, those who hold this view would generally admit there will be tribulations, but not the tribulations spoken of in Matthew 24.
Are you following this outline?
More or less.
Yeah.
Are you going to give the kingdom passages?
By that I meant, this is how they deal with what I was not going to give past, but that I meant, I covered that. You just didn't catch as I went by. My statement on that is they view the kingdom passage as referring to the church. The church is the messianic kingdom.
It's the same kingdom passage you gave back to the very beginning.
Well, no, not necessarily. You could fill several pages with kingdom passage. In your testimony, just a certain one. But the kingdom passage, that is, the teaching of the messianic kingdom has reference to the church, according to you. That's the only point I'm going to make on that.
There's one place in Paul's writing where he talks about the great apostasy. Could these other views and what would you view what that means and apply to the...
Well, let's wait until we get to some more topical studies to answer that question.
Okay.
It's a good question, but I just want to sort of answer the basic views before us. The rapture of the saints and the catching away of the saints, according to this view, takes place at the second coming of Christ, and those who hold this view say that when the Lord returns and takes out of the world the saved and the lost, that the key word here is the word separation. That it's not a matter of some being taken and then a long period of time or a significant period of time passing and others are taken. When the Lord comes, he separates the redeemed from the unredeemed. Saved from the lost. And it admits no secret rapture. As far as the resurrection of bodies, resurrection takes place at the second coming. This is in the twinkling of an eye that we are changed. Judgment, they look for as many as seven judgments. Two or three judgments. This view considers that there's only one judgment. It is called different things in the scriptures because when different aspects of the judgment are emphasized or being focused upon, there is basically one judgment. It is appointed to men once to die, and after this, the judgments. No. After this, what? The judgment. The judgment seat of Christ.
Back over resurrection of the body.
I didn't have much to say. Simply to say that this view, those who hold this view, that the resurrection of the resurrection of bodies takes place at the second time. So one time event, yes.
What about
Matthew 24?
Talking about the
Matthew 13. We're going to have a special study in Matthew 13, so we'll hold off on that. Consummation of all things is at the second coming of Christ. Then will be the new heavens and the new earth. Then, at this time, the lost will be revealed. About time of the trial, this is their judgment. We've already talked about this. Very simple view. The attitude toward the church is that it is the kingdom, as we've said, is the bride of Christ. And the marriage of the bride will take place. The marriage of the will take place at the second coming. The place of the Jews in this view, although there's not general agreement on this, the Jews are always the real ping pong ball. They're batted around quite a bit. But most of those who hold this view hold that there is no distinction between Jew and Greek now, and that in Jew and Gentile, and that the promises of salvation for the Jews in the Old Testament are fulfilled in the remnant of who respond in faith to Jesus Christ. This is, of course, exactly the book of the Romans teaches. And that national Israel owned no promissory notes to be